which on our previous Patreon-only episode about Marvel, we all sang the theme tune.
Presumably you're talking about...
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
That's the one.
The best. The best soundtrack.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm.
Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers, and today we're talking about Marvel's TV shows. And I am absolutely overjoyed to be joined by Alex, Hannah, and Lowry. We are going to do our usual round of introductions alphabetically. So, Alex, can you give us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
So my pronouns are he, him, and I'm the founder and CEO of Rusty Quill, and I have voiced a few things. That should do. There you go. That's me.
No details needed.
No details needed.
And Hannah, who are you and what are your pronouns?
Hello, my pronouns are she, her, and I am the COO of Rusty Quill, which is effectively problem solver, solution finder, WD-40 person across every department that we have. And yes, I sometimes occasionally leave the home, but generally I am here working.
Oh.
But I have a puppy now, so it's genuinely lovely to be home working. So
that's true. You've got a puppy and a whole garden.
I really like the description of you as a WD-40 person. I really like that. It fixes everything.
There's a problem, squirt it.
What do you do? Fix things and make some smooths. That's, yeah.
That's what it says at the tin.
Last, Lowry, can you give us your pronouns and tell us what you do?
Hello, I'm Lowry, she, her, and I produce Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And I produce Magnus Archives, and I edit, and my voice is also on some things. If it's Welsh, it's me or Faye, I think, is currently a correct statement.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, let's jump right into it. Now, as we know, there's been a load of new shows come out on Disney Plus, but before then, there were other Marvel TV shows. We may touch on those as well. I would like to know what people's favourites are out of the ones that have come out so far. I'm going to have to think about this. There was Jessica Jones. There was Luke Cage. Oh, Lowry.
I'm so sorry. Are we talking about like the Netflix ones as well?
Yeah, of course.
We
Marvel.
Can do.
Oh my God, I'm so much more excited immediately.
I'm going to do everything in my power to steer this into the 90s for Marvel TV, so don't mind me.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going to be bringing it right back to Tom Hiddleston, so between us we'll hit a middle ground.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
The perfect combination. There was... Is Daredevil Marvel?
Yeah, Daredevil's Marvel, because it's got Kingpin, it's got the overlaps, yeah. I mean, if you go into the 90s, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
ooh.
Peggy Carter as well.
Oh yeah, that's another one.
Oh my lord, the world has expanded.
You've got the original Incredible Hulk, where it was just, the Hulk was just a really big guy painted green.
Oh yeah!
Oh, yeah.
With silly hair.
With the sad music. Do, 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 do. At the end of every episode, you got the whole gamut.
I used to watch that at my great-grandparents' house. I remember no details.
Oh, and I guess there's the old The X-Men series.
Yeah.
Oh, classic.
Which on our previous Patreon-only episode about Marvel, we all sang the theme tune.
Presumably you're talking about...
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
That's the one.
The best. The best soundtrack. The merger has happened.
They're coming.
Oh, it
weirdly
has.
Buried, but it's happened.
Are we allowed to discuss X-Men in the Marvel universe? Is that a taboo at the moment?
Oh yeah, I'm ready for deep dive stuff here. Don't you fret about me.
All right, I'm excited.
Well, now that we've mentioned lots of TV shows, does anyone have a pitch for which one is their favourite?
It's either Spectacular or Amazing Spider-Man, which is the one in the 90s, with the rock guitar, at the same period as the X-Men.
I didn't see that at all. My favourite one is Daredevil, but seasons 1 and 3. Not so hot in season 2, if I recall correctly.
What happened in season 2?
I can't remember. I think it just got...
That's
like,
the
it's
problem.
Really violent all the way through. And I think
maybe Punisher had come out around about that time, and I was like,
there's just so much
violence, which normally I'm not that fussed about, but I was like, I'm kind of done seeing him get hit.
So are you on board then with season three, which, if I remember correctly, is like ninjas all the way down?
Yeah, look.
It's just all ninjas. What's the problem? Ninjas. Too many, not enough. Ninjas. Ninjas, ninjas, ninjas.
I'd had a break from the violence, so I was back in.
Hannah, what about you?
Yeah, I loved the idea of Jessica Jones, but actually I think it's WandaVision for me. It was the first time I'd really seen that. I mean, I know we'll be talking about it a little bit later anyways, but like having such a clear-cut episode-by-episode changing scene and aesthetic was something that I hadn't seen done before. And I thought, oh, that's the sort of thing I would want to make one day. So that's always good. But yeah, I think WandaVision for me.
My favourite so far has been What If, which is also the most recent one. But What If is just basically a series of fan fictions and... And I love it.
But because you picked the anthology one, which What If is your favourite?
I do have I think it might be the Doctor Strange one.
Yeah.
Because I am an angst monster and someone trapping themselves in a pocket dimension of their own misery. I'm like, nom, nom, nom.
And it was for love, Helen. It was for love.
I know. I know. Turning yourself into a monster because you love someone so much. Oh,
I love you so much, I'll squidify myself. Like, that's love.
Yes, right? That is prime Helen Bate.
I don't agree with having that depth of feeling on anything. Like, if you've gone that far down the rabbit hole, like, it's done for you. Like, it's too much. Have a cup of tea and a break. Just
have a Kit Kat.
Think about your life choices.
You would feel quite bad, wouldn't you, going to those lengths, and then when you finally get together, it's like, oh, but they do have an annoying laugh. Like, that's a big
sound.
That's a
they
big
chew.
Like, eternity level commitment to then go, oh, actually.
my favorite bit of What If though was like, that's a huge zombie. That's going to be a problem later. Why have they decided a huge zombie was the right call?
Take the helmet off her. Anyway. Why would you not take her helmet off? So she make her small and take her helmet off.
Lowry, the discussions and arguments I've had around that.
Oh, Hannah's fascinating to see anything Marvel with. Mostly just she assesses and criticises the tactics of the people involved.
I think we should watch some of these together.
Well, that's not a solution. Like the Sokovia Accords, logistically, you're not going to be able to, you know, you're not going to be able to see that through. No one's considered the long tail red tape on this.
They've won the battle, but they've lost the war. Am I right?
Gosh.
Yeah. It's come to our house. It's fantastic.
I would like to talk about the zombies episode though a little bit, because even though it's got my favorite, how should I put this? My favorite visuals of Bucky Barnes in it. There are several people who feel out of character in that particular episode.
Vision, the poorly thought through murderer.
Vision's 180 is astonishingly fast in that. I can't even remember the details. I just remember being like,
very pro-murder.
You've gone to all this trouble to lure people here and then suddenly just...
But he's not held back by silly human emotions. Of course you would. If the thing that you want needs help, then that's what you do. And if you're robot brain, then even better, surely. You're just applying your own loveliness to the situation, Lowry. That's the trouble. You're like, I'd have thought this through.
Yeah, but Vision's meant to be lovely.
Oh.
Maybe that's what lovely looks like in a zombie apocalypse.
Oh, I have missed the point.
No, I really liked Spider-Man in that What If specifically. Like,
yes.
That's a really good portrayal of Peter Parker. Like, that is digging right down into the bit of the character that actually people like and only showing that. It's great. Love it.
Does Into the Spider-Verse count as...
That's a film.
Not film, TV.
Because that would make a fantastic TV series, wouldn't it?
I would very happily watch like a dimension hopping.
This is where you're bouncing into the Spider-Man, the one that I was referencing, which was the first TV rendition of Madam Web and all of that, which is the first iteration of all of the interdimensional stuff. So it has been on TV. It was excellent. thoroughly recommend it.
Alex, who's Madame Web?
How do you not know who Madame Web is? Come on.
I don't know who Madame Web is. My knowledge is quite...
God, right. So, Madame Web... Okay, honestly, Madame Web is basically the web from Magnus, now I think about it. Madame Web is a woman who... Her superpower, I guess, is all to do with, like, interdimensionality. So when there's, like, a threat, so think multiverse, but less like, all of reality is going to die. But it's a lot... She does this thing, especially in the TV version, which is kind of what I'm referencing, where, like, oh, no, we have a problem. I'm just going to borrow Spider-Man from various dimensions to help with this situation. So it's like, this is one where he, you know, he's Man-Spider. This is one where he killed Dr. Octopus and took his arms. This, like, blah, blah, blah. So it's very Spider-Verse ideas. But, yeah, Madame Web is, in that iteration, the person who plucks... various Spider-Men together to fix a bigger problem, I guess.
I like it. That is very into the Spider-Verse slash what if, actually.
Yeah.
Arrogant Peter Parker's great. There's a version where it's Peter Parker where his life just went really well. Like, his uncle never died, so he just got really rich as a tech genius. And he's just a... That's his whole thing. Everyone's like, with great power comes great money. Yes. Yes, it does. Yes. Great. Love it.
Laurie, can you talk to me about Daredevil a little bit? Because I will confess, I did not... I watched Luke Cage and I don't think I watched many of the other shows at all.
So I watched all of... I have watched all of them multiple times, not for a few years, actually. And I think... I would say Daredevil is the best of the bunch, of the Netflix bunch. So much so that actually they're probably going to be bringing Charlie Cox into the MCU, which I am really, really,
really
excited about.
Didn't know that.
This is all like a theory... But I'm pretty... Okay. I think it's true.
I'd believe it. Like, you're right. It is the best of the Netflix
versions. Yeah, because he's the best. Though I have to say I do love... Oh, what's her name? Is it Kirsten? No, what's the woman who plays Jessica Jones? Oh, I can't remember her name. I also really like her as Jessica Jones. I think Jessica Jones is my second favourite one. What was your question, Helen? So just talk a bit about Daredevil.
Yeah, just tell me why you liked it, because I haven't seen it.
Do you know, I really liked the fighting, and I'm not like an expert in it at all, which is kind of funny that is then why I got tired of it in season two, or maybe that does make sense, I don't know. I think for me it was something that, it was very visceral. Like, you really feel all the punches that he gets. It has a really great corridor fight scene where it's all like one shot that I just remember watching over and over again, being like, they must have cut somewhere here. But it's just really, really well choreographed and pulled off and like well rehearsed.
And it's like 10 minutes long, isn't it?
Don't know if it's 10 minutes long, but it is really long. And it's just, and it's like really narrow. Like, they're fighting in a corridor and there are doors coming in and out of the corridor. And like, I wasn't very aware of audio back then, but my memory of it is that like, they really take time over the moments in the fight where everyone's just exhausted and you'd be like, okay. And then someone gets up and then you just start fighting again. And, you know, I can't even remember what the plot is. Like, who are the big... Oh, it must be Kingpin. It must be Kingpin.
Oh, yeah, season one's Kingpin. Like, best tea, like, so good.
Like, just the acting, the performers. It's just great. I highly recommend it. And, Helen, I think you should watch it.
Oh, I think you specifically, Helen, will like adore it. It's so good in season one. It's like an investigation of Kingpin, who is really into like gentrification as a solution to like a downtrodden neighborhood, and then you have Daredevil, who's like grassroots. No, we like the people involved have to fix the thing, and it's a good villain. You know the problem with half the villains are kind of but Kingpin's a great villain.
And such
really
a good
well
performance as well.
Amazing performance.
And I remember loving Vanessa in it too, who is like Kingpin's love interest. And it's just, she's not evil, but she's a woman who is just not, she doesn't have to be redeemed. She just is who she is. And she falls in love with this guy who is arguably quite evil. Maybe not evil. It's not a good person. And there's no apology for it. And I love that.
I'd include him amongst like all of the Marvel villains as one of the best Marvel villains, including films.
Ooh. Yeah.
He's really strong good. Claim.
And
really
let's hope
good.
That if they do bring Charlie Cox into the MCU, Vincent, is it, I don't know how to pronounce his surname. It's a D apostrophe and O something. I'm going to have to look this up. Anyway, let's hope they bring him in as well.
Oh yeah, you've got to bring both.
I never saw it. It sounds like I've been missing a trick.
It's what got me, I think that actually might be what got me back into Marvel.
were those shows?
Ooh.
I guess I would have been late 20s when they came out. I can't remember, actually.
Gosh, it is quite a long time now, isn't it?
No, yeah. Let's not play that game. That's a sad game. Oh, no.
That way madness lies. So, Hannah, you said that one of the things you liked about WandaVision was that it sort of skipped genres and like time periods in each episode. Did you have like a favourite one of those?
Oh, yeah. So I really, really enjoyed the first one or two episodes. That sort of I Love Lucy, sort of Sabrina the Teenage Witch type. And then there's you can see the strings coming on to take things away. And like, I'm very aware how much time and money it would have cost to make it look so low grade value, sort of towards what it used to be. Mm. I just think it's such a wonderful thing that it was like a love letter to each decade of iconic television, and that it didn't really show that that was what it was doing. It didn't let the audience in on that until you sort of watch two or three episodes and you sort of go, oh, I see what they're doing now. They're going up in sort of 10-year bouts. And I just hadn't seen that done before. So it was a real feat of, I think, creativity with a new medium. Well, not that new, actually, now that we're talking about Daredevil and Jessica Jones and stuff like that. I kind of like knew for the sort of Disney time of the Marvel Universe anyway. It was a really clever, I think, way of moving away from expectation of sort of the Marvel film stuff in a way that Winter Soldier didn't do, but that was the point. Yeah, I just think it was such a wonderful show that you'd be proud of to have been a part of. I'd have loved to have made something like that.
Especially costuming. They did a really good job on the costuming.
Yeah. I mean, the research on everything, props, costume, set, was amazing. And I think I agree with you, Hannah, actually. Like, I really enjoyed the earlier episodes, and then the more that traditional Marvel came in, I was like, obviously I love this, but I could do without this traditional Marvel stuff. In fact, I could have done without the whole Vision, White Vision plot line. I was like, what is this?
I mean, that was like half a plot line, really.
But to quote Paul Bettany, okay, it is Paul Bettany, right?
Yeah.
It's not often that you get to act opposite one of the greats. that was his wording, right?
That, fine. If it's all to build up just
so
for that.
He got in so much flack.
I bet he doesn't give a f***.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because you would, wouldn't you? You absolutely would. And go home sort of tittering to yourself that you've just set the world ablaze, knowing that it's just you again. That's a you move, Alex, honestly.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of the greats, though, I really enjoyed the actress who played Agatha. Let me see if I can...
Yeah.
Oh, I love her in everything. Oh, what's her name?
Catherine Han.
Catherine Han. Oh, I'm so upset that it didn't come to me immediately. She's amazing.
What I loved with her is hearing the theory about who her character was and then me genuinely going, nah. Nah. and then as it continued progressing, going, nah. No, it's nonsense. So good. Loved the performance.
Oh, she's who I want to be when I grow up.
Absolutely. Oh, hang on. Do you mean Agatha or Catherine Han?
Oh, both. I would interchange. I think one is like a daytime look and one is an evening and weekend affair. I think interchangeably fantastic. Nom nom, definitely in.
While we're talking about costumes, I'd just like to give a shout out to Vision's little jumpers. His little business casual look.
Exactly. They were great.
That was very cute.
He feels like a jumper kind of guy.
He does. He does.
Yeah, they nailed that.
Although, I will say one of the things that I liked at first and then was a bit disappointed by was they brought in Quicksilver from the...
Oh, the fake out. Yeah.
I hated that.
That felt cheap. I was... Because I really like... The X-Men Quicksilver, actually.
Same.
I prefer that Quicksilver.
Me too.
I think it's a better Quicksilver portrayal.
But yeah, the Quicksilver bit wasn't particularly necessary, I don't think. And I agree with you, Lori. I think I'd have loved to have seen a sort of Marvel Universe thing like WandaVision that just didn't deal with any of the superhero
Yes.
Just a look at a drama that was within the universe. I'd have loved that.
Daredevil came close to that. Mm. Daredevil did come close to that. Because as much as he has like the whole superhuman hearing thing, it's mostly about a lawyer who goes out and then beats up the people that he can't catch legitimately. Like, that's it. Like, that's
like
it.
Like Rich Robin Hood.
Honestly, yeah. Like, that's sort of the that's sort of the premise until it gets very ninja-y.
Mm. There are a lot of ninjas.
So why are there a lot of ninjas?
Because they're the cause of and solution to all problems,
so,
apparently.
One of the big villains is the Hand, which is like an ancient ninja.
A ninja hand.
Yeah, organization. And also like the whole thing about Daredevil is that he is, I can't remember how is he trained? He's trained by a ninja. Like, you know.
Yeah, he's
like,
trained by another ninja.
It's hand-to-hand combat. Fight with mistakes.
He's an urban ninja, trained by ninjas, fighting ninjas who are also at war with a different type of ninja. And all of this is after, like, a really gritty examination of the nature of urban sprawl and poverty within dense macroeconomic environments. And then someone goes, also ninjas? Mm. Ninjas, yes, ninjas, more ninjas.
Defenders is very good as well, and also quite ninja-y, but... There's just some really good, there's some great team-ups in Defenders. You just get past Iron Fist being there and then it's great.
Can we talk a bit about Falcon and the Winter Soldier in terms of how, to me, that feels like it was a TV show that was a Marvel movie split up into six or eight episodes rather than a TV show of itself, if that makes sense.
I think, Alex, I can't remember actually if it might have been you who I was having this chat with ages ago.
We've discussed
this,
yeah.
Because that was the one that was supposed to come out first, right? But because of COVID, WandaVision came out first. So I think actually was your theory, Alex.
Well, yeah, no, it's a thing I've spoken to a couple of people about, which is it's so contextual driven, where if you take the TV order that we have, which is WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, and then Loki, the original order, the first two were swapped. But the reason for that, from like a strategic planning point of view, was to ease people into the idea of watching high-budget Marvel TV instead of sort of lower-budget Marvel TV like Daredevil and so on, but, you know, like real, like, cinematic quality, but just sequential. So they were like, right, we'll make something that feels like an MCU movie, but chopped up, and then we'll get the weird stuff to get into, because it effectively goes... Marvel Winter Soldier are meant to get you used to Marvel TV. Then WandaVision meant to be, look at the crazy things we can do if you just let us. Mm. And then Loki was meant to be a setup for multiverse stuff so that people are used to weirdness via WandaVision and the conceit via Loki. But when you invert them, you end up with them having to take a massive gamble at the time, like a huge gamble going, are people going to be okay with WandaVision? Everyone loved it. And then you know that some poor producer sat in a room going, people are going to be really bored by what we've made next. Like, this is just a film. And it's good, but it's not I Love Lucy plus, you know, Space Wizards. Mm. And I think it must have been a set of very awkward conversations where they saw it through. And I think they executed well, but I think it's a very different world if you swap those background. And it makes a lot more sense as a sort of thematic through line, I guess.
Training your audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically,
yeah.
Is what it is, right?
Ring the bell and you get more Marvel.
You know I will ring that bell every time. Thing is, it came out at a time as well with the whole COVID thing where people really wanted new and exciting stuff.
Yeah, a bit more escapism.
I think if you had no COVID and it was in the original order, it would have worked and it would have guided people in. I think with pandemic, it's actually better in the order that they did it in, because like Laurie says, people were so craving, I need something new to occupy me, like properly new, not just stuff I feel like I've seen before. So people, and I sound like I'm dunking on it, I did like it, but people are more willing to sort of accept the return to norm via Winter Soldier, having seen, okay, I know you've got some big banana stuff in the works, you know?
And I think on that note, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got to talk about Loki, because we haven't talked about Loki yet.
And ninjas. We haven't talked about ninjas.
Oh, yeah, there are ninjas in some of them.
Hello, everyone. Helen here, who you probably know from Rusty Quill's first podcast, Rusty Quill Gaming, or from our chat show, Enthusiasm. Today, I'm here to tell you about Chapter and Multiverse, the new actual play podcast from Rusty Quill. Across each series of Chapter Multiverse, we'll be diving into multiple tabletop systems. No two series will ever be the same as we explore the City of Chapter across alternative universes. Chapter and Multiverse will feature a diverse rotating cast of performers. In our first series, GM Maddie Searle will be running a campaign of Masks A New Generation, designed by Brendan Conway. She will be joined by Ahmed Aljabri, Lori Ann Davis, Lydia Nicholas, and Pip Gladwin as intrepid young superheroes in the metropolis of Chapter, with Kareem Cronflee as the Eternal Tavern Keeper. Search for Chapter and Multiverse wherever you listen to your podcasts, or visit www.rustyquill.com for more information. Enjoy!
And welcome back. So as promised, really would love to talk about the Loki TV show as well. Because it's a weird one. It's a really weird one. I've got such mixed feelings about it.
At the risk of being the, like, cinema nerd for a second, amazing mise-en-scene. Really, really strong visuals that blended really well with the soundtrack. It had such a strong feel to it. Like, you can look at a still or any of the soundtrack or anything and you immediately know what it is. It is so deliberately A Clockwork Orange does massive space bureaucracy, but it works. Directorially, it's a very strong play, I think.
Beautifully crafted thing.
To stick with the positives, I was not expecting to enjoy what's-his-face that says wow so much.
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Right?
What a revelation.
He was the best thing.
How pleasant was that character to be around?
Yeah.
Just every moment you're like, ooh, yes, more of you, whatever you're doing. It's just fun.
I saw a tiny little snippet of Owen Wilson talking about Tom Hiddleston as part of the sort of circuit of this. And he said, oh, yeah, Tom Hiddleston was really sweet. And we were talking about, like, previous stuff that we'd done. And he said, oh, and of course, you know, I did Hamlet at such and such a place in this theatre. And then he said, and then there was the most British pause of all time. And he says, have you ever played Hamlet? And he said, I just laughed and couldn't do much more with that. No, Tom Hiddleston, I haven't played Hamlet. But he was so good. He was so good. We never got to see him on a jet ski.
Yeah. I loved how into jet skis he was. Mm. And it wasn't a thing. Mm. It wasn't a plot point. It didn't come up. It's just, this character just really likes jet skis.
It kind of is a thing though, right? Because I think that was a little clever thing that they did as well. It's like, before you know, the TVA employees are all from Earth and all, what do they call them, variants?
Yeah.
Like, it's putting things from their previous life in. And I was like,
yeah, like, absolutely, it fits. It's a fun, completely divorced from the world around him point that I was like, I love you so much now. I love that you like jet skis. I don't know why, but I'm just in. I'm now very in with you as a character.
But them as a pairing, I thought, worked really well as
Shouldn't
well.
Have.
Like that.
Absolutely
no, but
did.
Their chemistry, I believed in it. Mm. I have to admit, more than I did with Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm. I felt like they had a better, more sincere chemistry as a twosies.
Mm. And that beatdown in episode one, where it's just like, cool, here's your life on the screen, blah blah blah. Like, it's a good chunk of episode. What it is, episode one, I'm thinking of, where it's Owen Wilson's just like, cool, I'm going to deconstruct your entire character in 5 minutes, and then we're going to move the series on from there.
And the clock and the animated clock who comes in and she's like, hey, I'm going to do da 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 da, and I'm like, you're f***ing evil, then, aren't you?
like three words in, there's your big bad.
Yeah, it's the clock, innit? It's the clock, yeah.
Never trust a cheery animation.
Never.
You're helpful. Be gone! I know what you are!
Yeah, that first episode really packed a punch. Mm. It really did. Like, it's an excellent setup.
And it crushed. So, like, what it needed to do was take Loki from, like, Avengers 1 into basically where the audience are at with Loki post-Endgame. Mm. And it's like, cool, how do we do that in about 5 minutes, maybe 10 of episode time? When you actually think, like, how far they had to cheat it. This is the writer in me talking for a sec. Like, they compressed a massive amount by just going, cool, we'll just shatter the character into 1,000 pieces and then pick out the bits that we want after it. And it worked. And that's really hard to do. Like, incredibly hard to do that and you actually to care and not feel like you've been cheated by the compressed arc. I was amazed by the pilot.
Huge achievement.
I will say that lessened as time went on with that. Because the decisions that Loki was making started to become decisions that I did not recognise as being Loki decisions.
Did they feel imposed by a writer, do you think?
Well, I mean, they were.
No, but what I mean, though, is that, like, did it feel like that was someone trying to deliberately steer a character to a certain point as opposed to following what the character wanted to do organically?
Yes, yes. And also, this is really petty, right? But there's, I think it's the third episode.
Do it.
It's the third episode where they get to, like, they're in, like, the middle of an apocalypse. And there's a building falling and Loki stops it with his powers and, like, you know, they're able to get away from that collapse, right? And that is, like, the most powerful that we see him. The rest of the time, he's getting beaten up quite easily by almost everyone. And I'm kind of like, in a show that's called Loki, he doesn't feel as powerful as he has in previous...
This is the issue, and this is, like, inbuilt tension in the conceit of Loki as a series, which is... It only works if Loki is absolutely humbled by what's happening to him and the world, the new layer of world that he's being engaged with. But at the same time, Loki's meant to be a big deal.
Yeah.
And so there's this hard tension between how do you have Loki as the, you know, the shattered protagonist in a Kafka-esque nightmare, also high status... sex pot mischief maker. Like, those are
I can tell you exactly how you do that, and instead of having a female counterpart as part of the story arc, you just put Richard E. Grant in side by side from the first episode. That's how you have sex pot and also completely humbled individual in one go. You just need Richard E. Grant in a yellow suit. And you'll be
normally
set.
Hate like a cameo. Well, not normally hate, but like cameos can be so bad. But Richard E. Grant, I'm like, yeah, I'm in. Love it. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I genuinely want to see more of old Loki.
Yeah.
Via Richard E. Grant. Like, I would genuinely love to see I'm a Loki that made it long enough to actually get some perspective. And so all of my actions are way more like considered and measured. Like, I would
old man
love...
Loki, like Wolverine. Logan,
absolutely. I would love to see. I'd love to see more of old Loki.
Going back a little bit, I think part of what sold the so I'm not a huge Tom Hiddleston fan, which sometimes I found is controversial. I don't know, but so I really wasn't looking forward to Loki. Well, not that I wasn't looking forward to it, but when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, I actually think I might enjoy this. And then I was so surprised at how much I enjoyed the first few episodes. And I have to say that him watching his life. He did that so well. Like, I felt that when he saw... Like, I didn't get in Endgame. No, is it Infinity?
Loki dies in Infinity War, yeah.
I didn't feel emotional at that in the film. Watching him watch it on TV, I was like, oh, that got me. That was real good acting. Well done.
Yeah. When I was watching it, I kept thinking of, if you've seen Interstellar, the bit where main character, I've forgotten his name, is... watching how many years have passed while they were messing around on the planet.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I'd argue that's a more potent performance of the two. But at the same time, that's what kept coming up in my head is it hits that same, hi, actor. I'd like you to do some acting. How much? All of it. And you've got 2 minutes. Go.
And go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stuck with me and it bore a lot of faith from me.
Same.
Like, that opener was so strong, I was like, you could give me, like, 3 terrible episodes and I'm still going to be on board because that was such a strong opener. And I don't think they underserved either after that. It's just, it has an angle to it and it isn't up all the way.
Do we want to talk a little bit about the finale?
Of Loki specifically?
Yes. The fact that Loki and What If and WandaVision are all exploring the multiverse. And I suspect we'll all be drawn into Doctor Strange and the is it Multiverse of Madness?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Doctor Strange's Multiverse of Madness, and then you've got Spider-Man No Way Home.
Is it not the other way around?
I think Spider-Man's coming out first.
Spider-Man's coming out first.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't put those in order. I meant those are the two cinema films that are explicitly like, multiverse!
Yeah, which I am so excited for. I am so stoked. Especially because some of the press about the Doctor Strange film has been like, yeah, it's kind of more like a horror film. And I'm like, oh.
Good! That's what Doctor Strange needs to be. Mm.
And I like the fact that the Marvel Universe is exploring different genres.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think that's really interesting. I think it does need to come away from that superhero pew-pew stuff.
It has for a long time, and that's why it works, I think. Really, them leaning into that is a very yes, please thing.
Yes. But the reason I bring it up is because I want to talk about Kang the Conqueror.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I absolutely love as a character. An incredible backstory. And I really liked the performance.
He's effing amazing. I love him.
And it's just an excellent performance of someone who truly does not give a shit anymore. Like, he's seen literally everything.
You're talking Timekeeper.
Yes.
Yeah.
The guy
at the right end. At the end.
Because that scene is literally Jonathan Majors just being like, I am just monologuing and monologuing and monologuing. And we just fall in love. Well, I did. I just fell in love with him. He's amazing.
Oh, dear. I liked the actor, but I didn't buy it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's okay.
So, yeah, even hotter take. I didn't mind the performance and I thought it had a lot going for it. I don't actually like Kang the Conqueror as a character. I'm talking outside of like the TV. Like, I know I used to collect like the comics for various things and blah, blah, blah back in the day. So I know a little bit more of certain elements. And I always struggle with Kang the Conqueror as being a cool, you've saved the universe. Now save more universe.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it always feels like jumping the shark in terms of stakes. So it's a weird one where I have a bit of an odd divorce where like the portrayal, I'm like, okay, yeah, I see where you're going with that. I'm interested. But what role Kang the Conqueror is filling, it's going to need to be handled really well because Kang the Conqueror can just turn into, I'm big and powerful. What's your thing? I hate you. Anything else? No! Because what we saw for the Timekeeper was a Kang the Conqueror variant, specifically the only one that wasn't a conqueror.
Yeah, the only one who was a little bit chill.
So you're not going to see that portrayal again. You're not.
Mm.
And that worries me a little bit, because then I'm thinking, right, if that's the one that I'm never going to see again, does that mean that all of the others are going to be what I'm afraid of, which is, rah, I'm going to get you.
Hopefully they'll have one that's like that and they'll kill him immediately and then they'll have much more interesting nuanced ones.
This is my hope.
It doesn't leave an awful lot of space for development as a character if you're already at the very top tip of the mountain, I guess. But again, that's not a Loki-specific thing. I think that's just a character. When you're in charge of universes, I don't think that gives you much wiggle.
To bring it back around to what if, then, the Watcher is in a similar kind of position.
Yeah.
And he also fascinates me as a character.
But as a narrator, you couldn't ask for a more perfect thread through the series.
Oh, yeah, great
really
casting.
Good plot device if absolutely nothing else.
Yeah. And I like how he gradually turns up more in, like, the backgrounds of the episodes.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, spot him. I'm like, ooh
there he is. There's an eye.
There's my lad.
I'm more of a fan of the What If Watcher than I am of the Loki equivalent.
The What If portrayal of the Watcher is interesting as well, because, like, historically in the comics, deliberately, and this is kind of the point of the character, the Watcher is very rarely humanized. Like, very rarely, the Watcher is meant to be like this. It's almost like the Marvel equivalent of the Holy Ghost. It's like this ineffable, ephemeral being that's occasionally there. And if you really want to raise the stakes, someone notices the Watcher and you're like, ooh, hello. No one notices the Watcher. But for this one, you actually, and again, I'm not going to spoil final episodes because I haven't seen it. But the idea that there is any kind of motive for the Watcher is interesting to see. I haven't seen much of that outside of like the What If TV series specifically, and it must be very hard to write.
That's interesting. I haven't noticed a motivation for the Watcher. Have I not been paying attention?
It's that little hint that he wants to, like the implication of I'd love to help.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He
yeah,
clearly
sure.
cares about what's happening.
He gives a shit, yeah? And that's the thing that's interesting, is very often the Watcher can feel beyond cold, like almost like, you know, like because the Watcher is so removed from events, the idea of a Watcher who's like, oh, I wish I could.
Who's feeling it.
I won't, but I wish I could. Like, yeah, I wasn't expecting it. I really wasn't expecting it at all.
What I'm wondering about What If is how much of it they are, if it is just to prep the audience for, to really get behind multiverses, or if they are planning on bringing any of it over. And that's making me think of The Eternals, which I know is a film, but like the fact that, you know, they're going to have to justify so hard that they've done nothing. And they're suddenly like, well, you know what? Let's interfere.
There's a lot of admin and filing that needs to be done in the superhero-dom.
Do you have any idea how many risk assessments you have to file before you save the world?
The health and safety on this stuff, honestly.
Because Captain Marvel could get away with it because, like, she's just the one superpowered person, and Earth was basically fine until people started meddling around with things and drawing attention to themselves. But yeah. There's like 7 Eternals or something.
To be really, really cynical in a way that even for me, I'm like, I'm not that cynical. What If has historically for Marvel been really useful, because it is a wall that you can throw ideas at and see what latches.
It's a sandbox.
There is an entire comic run of Marvel Zombies because there was, if I remember correctly, there was like one nod to it once. Everyone loved it and they went, right, off we go. It feels a little bit like that. In fairness, they haven't used in What If, they haven't deliberately just dug through a bunch of fanfic. This is stuff that has like some kind of history within the comics, but it does feel a little bit like if every single person said that Marvel Zombies was the best thing they'd ever seen, you can bet your bottom dollar that someone is going to be starting to write Marvel Zombies as its own series. But that's me being incredibly cynical.
I mean, they may not have deliberately dug through fan fiction, but I've seen those scenarios.
Do you know have you what? Seen things?
I've
have
seen
you?
Them all.
I want to take us right back to WandaVision a little bit, because, and we don't have to stay there, but Darcy is such a small character, but in fanfic, such a popular character.
Yes.
And when she came back to WandaVision, I was like, oh, Darcy. And I just found I had all of these feelings about her that were not from the films. That were all from fanfic. Because it did seem odd that she was there. Like, such a random person to be in WandaVision.
You see, I don't know the fanfic side at all, I have to admit.
Darcy is often like a stand-in for...
Yeah, for the audience, I'd say.
She is the gift that keeps on giving, both as a performer and as like a character.
Yeah, she's great.
She is a bizarrely compatible character where, take a moment, there's not really any chunk of Marvel that you can't sort of slot her into, and she'll find a niche for the character.
Yeah.
Which... it's interesting. Like, I get why people would be writing about Darcy. Although it's interesting to hear. I didn't know that.
No, she's very popular. She's got a very strong personality without much screen time.
Yeah.
And so you don't really know that much about her. So you can make up a lot about her, but you can write her easily.
Sure, that scans.
The actress as well does a lot of heavy lifting there. Like, she's such a charismatic presence on screen, isn't she? Like, she draws attention.
Yeah, her and Jimmy together as well. I loved it. I was like, yes, I love this double act.
Yeah.
He's great. I love that he learned the magic trick.
Yeah, that worked really well. I would love to see a Marvel TV series. No superheroes, no powers. Just the characters like that. Like, we assemble a roster of like 7 or 8 of the just people, not major characters, you know, your Darcy's and things like that, and then do an ensemble series about that. I would love to see
I
that.
Want all of the superhero stuff going on off camera, that and they're just like dealing with the fallout of it, or ignoring it, or be like, for God's sake, I can't believe they've got to go and do this again. Well, I just want them to come and do this thing with me.
Sorry, I can't get to dinner. My flight's been cancelled. Oh no, what happened? Sokovia's flying again. It's just one of those things.
Alex, what you're pitching is effectively Marvel Lower Decks.
Yeah! Yeah! That!
I would absolutely watch Jimmy Woo's Bad Day at the Office.
Oh.
Pepper Potts' endless meeting.
Yes! Practicing magic tricks when he's bored in the corner.
Yes!
I think we are almost coming to time. Let me Oh, we are. We are. Oh, no.
No.
But there's so many things.
I know. There are
so many ninjas yet to meet.
I haven't even mentioned Daniel Brühl's coat.
Oh, my God. We haven't even talked about Zemo. I also need to say that Sebastian Stan's acting as well with, is it Io, the Dora Milaje, when he's going through the getting rid of the Winter Soldier training?
Yes.
Beautiful, chef's kiss. I just wanted to say that because I love him.
No, you're right. Absolutely. The interactions between Bucky and the Dora Milaje were truly a thing of beauty, like all of them. I really liked that dynamic.
Yeah.
The bit where his arm just pops off.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so impactful.
I'm sorry, Helen. You're trying to wrap it up and I'm just like...
No. The episode can't end if we all just keep coming up with new things that Helen's like, oh, yeah.
The plane won't leave without us.
What I originally had written down as like a nice little round off question was, you know, what do we want to see in future from Marvel TV shows? But we've just talked about it. We've just said we want to see the mundane characters just try to be normal while someone's jumping off skyscrapers and stuff.
I'd love it if it were made in a similar style to the British Office as well.
Oh my God, yes. Looking into the camera like, all right, so. Yeah.
Thor flying past in the background.
Pepper Potts giving a side eye to the camera when someone says something ridiculous. And wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yes, it would be.
Oh, then, okay. Who are your B characters you'd want in it then? I've started you off with your Darcy.
Yeah.
I think Darcy's a strong contender. Is there any other like characters you're like, I want this one in there?
We've said Darcy, Jimmy Woo and Pepper Potts so
I
far.
Really loved, is it Hunter B-15 from Loki?
Yes!
She was
excellent.
Brilliant.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
she would take, she's just such a no-nonsense character.
Yes.
She would fit very well in that, I think.
I don't want any of the children that Wanda has. They were rubbish.
Oh!
They can...
Hot take coming in at the end.
Harsh and cold from Rankin.
No, I don't want them as interns. I don't want them turning up at that office space in any capacity at all.
Oh my gosh, I want... I only know her as Anya from Buffy, but I thought she was going to have a really big part in WandaVision because she's an actor people know.
Who was she?
You know, Anya from Buffy, the blonde woman in...
Emma Caulfield.
She the one who like cuts her hand in the early episode and then it's all a bit weird and then...
Oh, yes.
I just like, just because of who she is. She wouldn't be good in our TV show, actually.
I'd put Valentina in as like a head of HR type person.
Who's Valentina? Yeah.
She's the one that comes in at the end going, boo-hoo, that was bad. Take my card, I'll make you rich. Just don't worry. Morals, no, you don't need them.
Yeah. She's the one who takes John What's-His-Face under her wing.
Lurie, you'll know this one. Daredevil's law partner. I've forgotten his name.
Is it Foggy?
Foggy, yeah. I'd put Foggy in there as well.
Yeah, I like him too. I guess that's kind of his role in Daredevil, actually, is to be that person.
A little bit.
The one looking into the camera.
Well... Disney hit us up. We found the, probably in terms of casting, the cheapest show that someone's going to pitch you. But I like it. I'd watch it.
Yeah, you've got four viewers here.
Cut, print. We'll make millions.
Cut the check.
What's the name of the lead bodyguard from the Wakandan Guard?
Okoye is the general, and then Io is the one who is in Falcon Winter Soldier.
I realize that she hasn't been any of the television yet, but I just want her in everything that I ever see ever again.
I think that's a valid take, frankly.
She's very good. Yeah, I'd like to see her just sorting out something small scale.
Yeah.
And just be like, this is so below my pay grade, but like she's stuck there for some reason.
Like the birthday party for like one of the directors.
Quietly simmering.
Seething.
Quietly seething, but still getting on with it, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I'd love a bottle
popping
episode.
Popping balloons when no one's looking with a spear.
Yeah, I'd love a bottle episode because I like bottle episodes anyway, but just something where someone is in... a silly situation, stuck in the same room. But yeah, okay. We're definitely at the end of the episode now.
No. Helen, what about this other great thing?
What else?
I am taking a stand. I am putting my foot down with a firm hand and I am going to say thank you for listening, everybody. This has been, we talk about Marvel TV a lot and have lots of feelings, hour. Thank you so much. Thank you, all of you, for coming on and talking about it with me.
Thank you for letting us near you on this wonderful occasion. I've loved every single moment of it.
Thank you for continuing to enable my chaos. Yeah.
That is basically my role.
I was just so happy to get to talk in this episode, because usually I'm watching you all talk and be like, I want to join in.
I'm so happy that you got to join in on this one, Lori. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from them. Do you want to say goodbye, everyone?
Bye, everyone. Of course you did.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lori Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner, and edited by Marissa Ewing, Tessa Vroom, Maddie Searle, Jeffrey Niels Gardner, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.